Okay, so good morning. Like I said before, because tomorrow is Asara B'Teves, I thought we would start our series with the class on Asara B'Teves. You know, thinking about all the other, you know, fast days that we have Yom Kippur, which we prepare for, we have Asara Yemei Tshuva. We have Tisha B'Av, which we have, you know, 3 weeks and then 9 days, and then we have from Rosh Chodesh, and it's something that we're constantly preparing for. And somehow Asara B'Teves kind of hits us. And unless we look at the calendar, or, you know, we get the shul bulletin, we don't even know what's coming. So I felt like it was, you know, a good idea to delve into what exactly is going on Asara B'Teves. And in Teves, you know, we just come off Hanukkah, and it's a whirlwind. We don't even realize that Rosh Chodesh Teves is coming because it's kind of in the middle of Hanukkah. So it said, the Zohar actually brings down that there are 3 months of the year that Esav has a tfisa, Esav has a stronghold on. And Teves is actually one of those months that Esav has a stronghold on. In fact, we know, we look at Teves, it's a month that has no holidays. It's a month that the daylight hours are getting shorter and shorter, and the nights are getting longer and longer. As, you know, obviously everything's getting colder as well. And in fact, the Gemara Megillah tells us that during Teves, 3 days of darkness descended into this world. We have Ches, Tes, and Yud Teves. So on Ches Teves, we have what we call Targum Shivim, in English called the Septuagint, where Talmai the Second, he gathered 72 elders and he put them into 72 separate rooms, and he said, "Here, translate the Torah into Greek. Translate it for me." He had a great love of Sfarim and of libraries, and this is something that he wanted in his library as well. So he gathered them and he had them all translate the Torah, and Hashem made a great nes because all the, you know, one pasuk to translate, if we ask 70 people to translate the same way, you can imagine how many different interpretations we would have. But not only did they all come about the same way, but they all had the same Ruach HaKodesh, the same ability to make the same changes. For example, the Torah starts off, Bereishis Bara Elokim. We translate it as, in the beginning God created. But in order not to confuse the world, some people in the world might say, oh my gosh, this being named Rachis created God, and therefore someone else created God. So they all changed it the same way to write Elohim Barab Rachis. And similarly, we know another example in the creation of man, the pasuk says, Na'asa Adam, let us make man. But so that it should not be misinterpreted, you know, to think that God had partners in the creation of man, they all translated it the same way to the Esa Adam, I will make man, and so on and so forth. Then we come to Tes Teves, the next day. And the Torah writes, we don't really know what happened. He says, Lo kasvu raboseinu amahu. It's a bad day, but the rabbis didn't really tell us what happened on this day. And then we have perhaps the most famous, which is Asara B'Teves, which is the 10th of Teves, and that is, the Babylonians began the siege around Yerushalayim. Now remember, this, just, you know, historically, this siege, you know, was not right before, it wasn't the Teves right before the Shavasar Batamas that they broke the walls, but in fact it was about 3 years before they actually, you know, broke the walls. Okay, so now that we know what these 3 days of darkness are, let's try to understand a little deeper. I mean, personally, yes?
I'm already confused. I always thought that was when the Romans surrounded
This siege, yes. Actually, the pasuk in Yechezkel said, it speaks about it, which we'll get to later, and it says that when Bavel did it, and it was Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. But this siege was in the time of Bavel. So let's just start with some questions. First of all, we have Ches Teves, Tes Teves, right? Chazal tell us, yes, something bad happened. It was one of these days of darkness. But what does it mean that it's unknown? We don't know what it is. We're mourning for it. It's part of our fast day, but yet we don't really know what it is. And why would we mourn such a day? You know, there's just something in the air. And then furthermore, you know, although the Torah says, no, the rabbis don't tell us, we don't know, the Magen Avraham gives us another insight. He says, you know, if you look into the slichos of the day, if you look into the slichos that we say on Asara B'Teves, he quotes that, yeah, we do know what happens on Tes Teves. On the 9th of Teves, Ezra HaSofer died. So, if the reason is given in the slichos, then why does the Torah say it's unknown? Because clearly the Magen Avraham knew what the reason was. And furthermore, what is it about the death of Ezra HaSofer that's considered one of these days of darkness? Or, I mean, when we think about it, often, especially in Hasidic circles, the day that a big Rav or a Rebbe dies, we make a hilulah. We have a party. We don't say tachanin in shul. We drink a l'chaim. We have schnapps. And here, it's one of our 3 days of darkness. So, what's going on with what's going on here? Why is this Tesh Teves one of these days of mourning? Then we go on to the next day, on Asar B'Teves, when the Babylonians began the siege around Yerushalayim. And, like again, I said, it was about 3 years before the actual breaking of the wall, the breaching of the walls, and then on Tisha B'Av, the burning of the Beis HaMikdash. So, what is so severe about this day? I mean, it was actually 3 years before the actual event of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. I mean, I can understand Shavasar B'Tamas. I understand Tisha B'Av. But what does Asar B'Teves come to add? Do we really need another fast to mourn and to commemorate the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? We already have two. Why do we need a third? What is Asar B'Teves coming to add? Now, there's something extremely fascinating and unique about Asar B'Teves. When it comes to all of our other fasts, even Tisha B'Av, what happens if Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos? Do we fast on Shabbos? No, we don't fast on Shabbos if Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos. But when it comes to Asar B'Teves, this day that we don't really know so very much about, or we can't really understand, if Asar B'Teves were to fall out on Shabbos, we would fast. Because, like we said, the Pasuk in Yechezkel talking about the siege around Yerushalayim, the Pasuk says, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, on that very day. And so therefore, Chazal say, if Asar B'Teves were to fall out on Shabbos, we would fast on Shabbos. Now, calendarically, the way our calendar is structured, it never happens. I mean, it's already strange that we have it on Friday this year. But theoretically, it could happen, and if it did happen, we would fast. Which is, again, you know, bizarre. What is unique about Asar B'Teves that it's Docha Shabbos, that if it would fall out on Shabbos, we would fast on Shabbos, when we don't fast for even Tisha B'Av, the actual destruction of the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos? So let's try to get a little bit of a deeper understanding. What's going on here? Yavan, Greece, what was their emphasis? They emphasized external beauty, right? The Torah tells us in Bereishis, when it's talking about the Choshech, it says, Choshech zu Yavan. Darkness, this is Yavan. Why? Shehechshichu es einehem shel Yisrael. Because what? Yavan darkened the eyes, they dimmed the eyes of Bnei Yisrael. Now, Choshech, darkness, it's not a new entity, right? It's not a creation of something new, but rather it's a removal. It's a dimming. It's a blockage of the light, right? Darkness is the absence of light. When my lights are off in my house, do I pay my electric bill? No, because there's nothing generating. Nothing is being created. Nothing is being done. So what did Yavan do? They created this darkness. They created a cloud around the Torah, and they didn't allow us to see the pnimius, the inside, the core of really what the Torah stood for and what the Torah was. Now, the Or Gedalia Yahu brings down, I'm just going to quote it inside a little bit. He says, what was the goal of Yavan, the goal of Greece? Malchus Yavan, lo haya b'da'atam lahachriv et Beit HaMikdash. The goal of Yavan, the goal of Greece, their goal wasn't to destroy the Beit HaMikdash. V'gam lo ratzu la'akor es haTorah. Nor did they want to uproot, nor did they want to get rid of and destroy the Torah. Mikol v'kol, v'adarava, ayadam haya parsum shel Torah shebechtav, right? On the contrary, through the hands of Yavan, what we said, Talmai the Second, there was a pirsum, there was publicity of what the Torah shebechtav was, because now it was translated. It was accessible to those who did not necessarily only speak Hebrew, right? Talmai the Second was the first person to create art scroll. It was now accessible to the masses. More people could read it, understand it, know about it. So their goal wasn't to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and their goal wasn't to get rid of the Torah. Upersumet hayofi shel haTorah, and they even made it known how beautiful the Torah was. Aval himratzu levatel et haor hapnimi shehiir haBeit HaMikdash haor azu Torah haor shebaTorah. What do they want to get rid of? They wanted to get rid of that internal light that was in the Torah, the light that came from the Beis HaMikdash. Et ze gazru levatel, va'al ze haya ikar ha-melchama, ki yoban ratza ba culture shel Am Yisrael, v'eskima sheyelahem beis ha-mikdash, u-medina la'atzmam, aval ha-kol b'toras culture, v'chachma, u-keshitas ha-misyavnim, niya k'chol ha-goyim beis Yisrael, v'lo yelah-Am Yisrael derech ha-cheres v'gavoa mishar ha-omos. What was the goal? Yes, we can have a nation of Israel. We can have a Beis HaMikdash. That's your place, just like someone else might have a church, but it's a national building. This is your country, but it's in terms of being a culture. There's no difference in B'nai Israel versus the other nations. The Torah doesn't elevate us. It doesn't make us anything special or unique, but rather, that is the book of our culture. The Beis HaMikdash is the place that represents our culture, but we are just that. We're a culture. We're like any other nation that has their unique monuments and their unique writings. They wanted to make us into a national entity. Yes, B'nai Israel, you can be something, but you can just be a national entity. There's no special kedusha. There's nothing added that you have or that you gain from your lifestyle, from your Torah, from whatever you're involved in. In fact, the Lubavitcher Rebbe explains in a similar vein that the Greeks, they weren't against us learning Torah. They only wanted it to be something intellectual, something that we learn, but it doesn't affect us as a people. The mitzvos, what were the mitzvos that the Greeks opposed to? Shabbos, Bris Milah, Rosh Chodesh. Why? Because these mitzvos show that mitzvos affect who we are. They affect us physically, they affect us spiritually, and they affect us in time, in the way we go about our lives and our days. This is exactly what Hitler said. What did Hitler say? He said, the Jews have inflicted two wounds on humanity, circumcision on the body and conscience on the soul. Our Torah and our mitzvos, they're not just an intellectual pursuit or culture, but they affect who we are both physically and spiritually. And we have on the opposite side of the scale, we have Aristotle, the famed philosopher and the prototype of Greek culture. He stood for the exact opposite. You know, once someone asked Aristotle, you know, how could such a famed and renowned philosopher be involved in certain compromising behavior? And what did he respond to them? He said, I learned mathematics. Does that mean I have to be a triangle? Because Aristotle said, yes, there are two Aristotles. There's Aristotle the philosopher, and then there's Aristotle who's involved in everything else in life. And they don't connect. And there's no correlation between the two. You can be one person when you're involved in these intellectual pursuits and this, you know, great understanding of the world and philosophy. But then when I go about my daily life and when I'm involved in other things, that I'm a totally different person. And what I learned and I philosophize about has no connection or correlation to my everyday life. And that's really what Greek culture says, that whatever you learn, it has no effect on who you are as a person. Everything's external. Everything's about the outside, the beauty, it's superficial. But there's no pnimius, there's no depth. And that's why, what do they say to B'nai Israel? Kisvu lochem al karen ashor, write for yourselves on the horn or of an ox. She'ein lochem chelek be'elokei Israel. You have no chelek, you have no portion in the God of Israel. Why? Because godliness is not a part of you. There is divinity, and then there's you, but there's no correlation. They're totally two separate entities that are not connected. And so when the Torah was translated, the pnimius, the inside, that inner light was lost. When you read a word in Hebrew, the language has a lot of depth. It has a lot of meaning. And often, when you translate it, it's lost. I'll give you an example. We have the word ahava. We translate it as love, right? And we can explain what we think love means. But the famous Rav Dessler says, what's the root of ahava, the shoresh? The word hav, which means to give. So the Torah is telling us a way to create that love, to sustain that love by giving. And when you translate the word love into English, you lose that message. You don't even understand that there's any correlation between love and giving. Maybe love is just feeling butterflies in my stomach or being swept off my feet. But we don't understand that there's so much more to love than that, and it's lost in translation. In fact, we know that sometimes when words are translated, it's not just there's meaning that's lost, but they're completely misinterpreted. We have the famous example of the word na'ara, which we can translate as young maiden. But when Christianity translated the Bible, they translated it into the word virgin. And from there, they have their supposed proof of the virgin bride, of this whole concept, which really is the backbone of their religion. You see that when we translate something, there's so much that can be lost and so much that could be misinterpreted that we lose so much of the depth. And not only that, but we know that when we look at the Aleph Beis and when we read the Chumash inside, I mean, there are Rashis, there's so many Mefarshim about why is this letter, why not that letter? There's an extra Vav, there's not a Vav, there's this. There's so much that can be learned from every part of the Torah, and then when you translate it into another language, that inner meaning and that depth is lost. So on to the next thing. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Ezra HaSofer, he was actually worthy of being the person to give us the Torah. Had obviously Moshe Rabbeinu not preceded him, but Moshe Rabbeinu came first, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who gave us the Torah, but Ezra theoretically could have been the one to give us the Torah. Nevertheless, even though Ezra HaSofer did not actually give us the Torah, he was privileged to reintroduce this special writing, this special ksav. It's called Ksav Ashuri. Now this writing was the original writing that when Moshe wrote the Torah and the two sets of luchos, it was written in this unique ksav, Ksav Ashuri. But then, you know, for whatever reasons, for secular purposes, we began to use another set of ksav to write everything, and that was the ksav Ivri. And over the generations, and especially with, you know, Bnei Yisrael becoming distanced from Hashem and the sinning, we began to forget the ksav Ashuri, this original very important print, and only remembered the ksav Ivri. In fact, the famous story of Belshazzar, when he saw, this is where the quote comes from, the writing on the wall, when he saw the handwriting, Menei, Menei, Takel, Ufarsin, and know who was able to translate this dream? Well, the ksav was actually ksav Ashuri, and Daniel was one of the few people left at that generation who actually knew what ksav Ashuri was. And so he was able to translate the dream. But you know, later on, especially with Ezra, who started this mass Baal Tshuva movement, bringing Bnei Israel back to Hashem, he reintroduced this very important ksav, and from then on, he insisted that all the sacred text, all the text should be written in this square letter script that we are actually familiar with today. That's what we use. And we know that there's so much depth that can be learned from the structure and the shape of the Hebrew letters. I mean, we can have shiurim, especially when we speak about months, that the yud, how it comes from the top and it goes down, or the hey, that it has the space. And even the crowns on the letters that we have in the Ksav Ashuri, when you look at a Sefer Torah, they're not just written, but there's crowns on top of the letters. There's so much that we can be learned from the structure of the letters and the way the letters are written. And Ezra preserved this Ksav for future generations, thereby preserving access to this psnimius, to this inner meaning and inner understanding of the Torah. And more than that, there are those who say that Ezra HaSofer was also Malachi. Malachi was the last Navi, the last prophet of Bnei Israel. And with his death, we lost the ability to see deeper, right? What was the purpose of the Navi? The Navi gave us the ability to see things in a deeper way and to gain understanding. The Navi gave us depth and insight into many situations, personally and nationally. I mean, people would go to the Navi and say, can you help me find my sheep? Or, you know, the enemies are attacking. How can we understand this? Should we fight? What should we do? There was so much depth and that the Navi was able to, and insight to Bnei Israel that the Navi was able to give them. So I think it's based on this that we can go back to one of our original questions. We said that the Torah said, you know, the rabbis don't tell us. We don't really know, you know, what happens on Test Teves. I think that the rabbis write that we don't know what happens, or it's not known, because we're so far removed from what was then, and we're so much sunk into this state of darkness that we don't understand what it means that Ezra preserved this unique ksav and that we can understand depths. And not only that, we don't know what it means to live without a Navi. I'm saying, you can't explain to a person what chocolate tastes like if they never tasted it before. You know, you can just try to describe as much as you want. You know, we mourn the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and we give ourselves all these examples, but it's so hard for us to understand what the Beis HaMikdash actually was without ever experiencing. And now actually we see this same concept when they rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash. You have two completely separate reactions. You have the older people who are crying and the younger people who are rejoicing. The younger people are so excited. Wow, we finally have a Beis HaMikdash. How amazing. And the older people are crying because they said, this is wonderful, but if you only knew what the first Beis HaMikdash was, if you only knew what this Beis HaMikdash is missing, the Aron and the Urim Ritumim and all the things and the glory that was in the first Beis HaMikdash, you would understand what's lacking. And so We don't know what happens, or the rabbis can't explain it to us because we've never experienced it. We're in this quote-unquote darkness of Yavan. We're so far removed from what Nevuah is. But the Megillas Tainis brings down another reason for the darkness of Teves. And I think this reason really gives us a little bit more of an insight or better understanding into maybe why the rabbis censored what happens on Tes Teves. So the Megillas Tainis says, what happened on Tes Teves? Nolad Oso Ha'ish. Jesus was born. Tes Teves was the day that Yeshu was born. Now Jesus was, obviously we know he was Jewish. He was a Tana. He was a learned man. And what happened? He took the Torah and he made it into a script, right? He took out the death. There's no longer any halacha or Torah Shabbat Peh that we learn when we read the Chumash, but rather it's a simply translated story, right? He took Judaism and he made a new religion, thus removing the light and the depth of the Torah. They have the Old Testament and we have the Chumash. But other than, you know, the simple translation of the words, there's not much in common. There's no Rashis, there's no depth, there's no halacha, there's nothing else that can be learned. He removed the pnimius, he removed the depth and the great light that Torah has to bring. And with that, we come to the next thing that happens in these 3 days of darkness. We have Asara B'Teves, and we have the siege of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim also points to pnimius. It points to the depth and the inner beauty, and that something more is there. And on some level, that was lost with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, starting with the siege on Asara B'Teves. Because we know Yerushalayim is the eye of the universe. It's the place that brings light and it brings clarity into the world. We say Yerushalayim O Rosh HaLolam, it's the light of the world. And it's the place where Torah, coming from the words Torah, messages, instructions emanate from. We say Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah Udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. The Torah comes from Yerushalayim. The instructions, the way of life. And Rav Hirsch writes that the word ear, the word city, comes from the word air, to awaken, to arouse. Because he says the job of a city, specifically the job of Yerushalayim, is to awaken us. What does the first part of Yerushalayim come from? Yeru, Yera'eh, which means to see. Because Yerushalayim reminds us of God's place in this world and our connection to Him. And who was the person who called Yerushalayim Hashem Yera'eh? It was Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu coined this term. Because who was Avram Avinu? He, at age 3, he looks at the world and he said, it can't be. It can't be that this is all happenstance. It can't be that this just came about and that there's some sun and moon and stars and the wind has power and everything else has power. He looked deeper. He saw that there had to be something there, something more. And it's for that reason, when we build a new house or we do construction, what do? We leave a place undone, a square undone or unplastered. And at a wedding, which is the height of our joy, what do? We break the glass to remind us of Yerushalayim. Because all of these things point to something that's missing in our lives. That there's more to life than just routine. There's a relationship with God, and life has meaning, and life has purpose. And so on Asara B'Teves, we mourn what Yavan brought. We mourn the darkness that Yavan brought. That our lives and our Judaism has become somewhat external. And we have to remember, and that's what we're trying to do now, that Yiddishkeit, that Judaism has depth. And there's meaning, and there's purpose. We're so lost in a generation that tells us, oh, it's important to have brand names and luxury items, and you want to know how to be important, just look at the billboards. If you have this, and if you have that, then your life will be important. Then you will be someone of importance. If you wear this, if you dress like that, if you drive this. And Asara B'Teves reminds us of this darkness that Yavan generated. It reminds us to look at our lives and to search out for the pnimius and for the depth. Judaism is not about shtick. It's not about what kind of yarmulke you wear, if you use plastic tablecloths or not, and do you eat gebrachs or do you not eat gebrachs. It's about how does Torah and mitzvot affect who I am as a person, and what kind of person am I as a result of them? How does it change me? How does it make me a better person? And this is how we regain the clarity that was lost during Teves. We need to take that light of Hanukkah, the light of the menorah, and we have the light of the Torah. We have to bring it into our homes and allow it to affect our very being. And so on Asara B'Teves, we mourn the loss of clarity. We mourn the darkness and the loss of the pnimius. But at the same time, we remind ourselves, you got to dig deeper. You have to look down. And in that way, we are empowered to change our lives and to change the current situation. So what is it about Asara Bataves that brings about this clarity? I think if we go back to one of our original questions, we'll gain a little bit of a deeper understanding. We said that what's unique about Asara Bataves, right? If Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, do we fast? No. But if Asara Bataves were to fall out on Shabbos, we would fast. So what is special about Asara Bataves that it causes us to be able to fast on Shabbos? So the first answer, which I think is a little bit more simple and basic, is that it's all about the beginning. It's about the Haskalah. And all the bad things that happened on Shavuot or B'Tamuz and on Tisha B'Av, they did happen. But what was the starting point? The starting point was Asara Bataves. And I'll give you an example. Let's say, lo aleinu, a person's diagnosed with a terrible illness. You know, and there could be that there are some treatments and a lot of pain that's going to happen afterwards. But what is the day in that person's life that changed everything? The day that they got that diagnosis. That's the Haskalah. That's Asara Bataves. And similarly, when a couple gets divorced, right, they could theoretically be married for another 2 years. They could be even living in the same home. But what is the day that changes everything in their relationship? That day that they decide to get the divorce. That day that we broke our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That the nations around us were able to make a siege around Yerushalayim. We see the same idea, the same debate that surrounds Tisha B'Av, right? We know that the Beis HaMikdash started burning on Tisha B'Av, but it continued on the 10th, right? We still have some of the Avelas till Chatzos on the 10th, right? We still don't shower, we still don't eat meat, we don't do laundry. The same things that we did before, we continue on. And so the debate is among the Chachamim, well, so when should we fast? Should we fast on the 9th? Or should we fast on the 10th? Because on both days, the Beis HaMikdash burned. And the answer is, we fast on the 9th, because it's the Haskalah. Because it's the Haskalah to Paranusa. It's the day that the misfortune begins. It's the start. And so therefore, the start is what is so severe. And this is one understanding. But I think if we look into the Chasam Sofer, into his explanation, we're really going to shed light onto what really Asara Bataves is all about. What's so important about Asara Bataves? The Chasam Sofer writes in his Perush on the Slichos, that, again, normally we don't fast on Shabbos for Atzara, right? Let's say somebody dies, right, and we want to commemorate. We don't fast on Shabbos. It's something that happens in the past. But there's one exception to this. There's one exception in Halacha of a time that a person would be able to fast on Shabbos. And that's called a Tainus Chalom. Let's say a person has a bad dream. If something really spooky happens, someone's going to die, this, that, and the other. They have a bad dream. So a person would be able to fast on Shabbos for that bad dream. Sometimes when people have bad dreams, they choose to fast because the fast, you know, hoping that the fasting will have some power to help nullify this horrible decree that they think is going to happen to them. And it's said that even though on Shabbos there's the concept of oneg, we have to enjoy Shabbos, but a person is going to get a lot of oneg, a lot of enjoyment in fasting on Shabbos, knowing that perhaps this fast has the power to nullify this decree, whatever he dreamed about. And so therefore, when it comes to a tainus chalom, a fast about a bad dream, a person would be able to fast on Shabbos. And it's based on this that we can understand why if Asara Bataves falls out on Shabbos, we would be able to fast. Because on Asara Bataves, we're not fasting on a past Sarah. We're not just fasting about, oh, the Babylonians surrounded Yerushalayim. But rather, we're fasting about the fate of the Jewish people for this year. What's going to happen in this year? On Asara Bataves, it's decreed, are we going to have a Tisha B'Av this year? What's Tisha B'Av going to be like this year? Is Tisha B'Av going to be a day of destruction? Is it going to be a day that of sorrows that are going to come upon Am Yisrael? Is it going to be a day that we're going to mourn once again the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed? Because we know any generation that the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt is as if that generation destroyed it. Or is this Tisha B'Av we're going to be dancing in Yerushalayim with the building of the Beis HaMikdash? And all of that is decreed when? On Asara Bataves. Because Asara Bataves, we're fasting in hope of nullifying the decree that's going to come about on that very day. That this year is going to be a year of Geula. That this year is going to be a year of good things that are going to happen to Klal Yisrael. And we're not going to have to mourn the personal and national harbanos that we go through all of the time, especially on Tisha B'Av.
What happened this Tisha B'Av?
always. I mean, Rabbi Arya Kaplan has an article about years and years and years. So we look around at the Horban and the Tsaros, and we see in both Klal Yisrael on an individual and national level. And that's it, ladies. This year, Asar B'Teves, this is our chance to change it. This fast day, tomorrow we have the ability to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nullify those decrees. Give us Tisha B'Av this year. That's going to be a day of rejoicing. That's going to be a day of Mashiach, of Yom Chagiga Mashiach, a day that we're going to rejoice with Mashiach. So ladies, what's the source of this? The source of all this tzara and the Chorban of Asar B'Teves. And it's not just by chance that the parsha that we read this past Shabbos is Vayigash. Obviously it comes to shed light on this Yesod, on the time period that we're in, that Vayigash precedes Asar B'Teves. What is the story of Vayigash? Vayigash, I love Yehuda. Yehuda comes to Yosef and he says, no, you can't keep our brother, right? And there's this whole dialogue between them. And what comes out? Mechiras Yosef. You guys sold me. And that's what comes out this week. And not only in the Parsha, but it's the month itself. In fact, the month of Teves, every month has its own mazel, its own zodiac sign. And what is the sign of Teves? The sign of Teves is the Gedi. It's the goat. Because it was that very goat that was the cover-up for Mechiras Yosef. The brothers took Yosef's coat and dipped it into the blood of the Gedi and said, look what happened to our brother. That was all part of the cover-up. And so it's that we go back to the lesson of Asar B'Teves, right? We need to, like we said, Asar B'Teves is all about looking deeper, looking into the pnimius. And so often, we come to conclusions and we judge others without even looking into the pnimius. How are they dressed? What kind of yarmulke are they wearing? What shul do they belong to, right? We forget about the depth of the Jew and we create these feelings of baseless hatred, of sinas achim, of sinas chinam, that stems, all the sinas chinam stems from Mechiras Yosef. So Asar B'Teves reminds us to look deeper. The events that occurred during these 3 days of darkness not only remind us to do so, to look deeper, but they remind us to steer clear of the cause. Stay away from sinas chinam. Stay away from this baseless hatred. And so we go back to the 3 days and the three things. It's our language that unites us. And that was part of the tragedy in translating the Torah. Right? A Jew, no matter where he is in the world, when he meets another Jew, they can connect. How? They speak to each other Hebrew. I remember my husband last year, he went on a mission to Odessa with Yeshiva University. He was the Rav on the mission. And he was telling me about all these people that he met and these amazing Rabbanim. And I said to him, well, were they born in America? He said, no, born in Russia, born in Israel, born in... I said, well, so how did you speak to them? Like, silly me. He goes, in Hebrew. Because it doesn't matter where you are. A Jew can talk to another Jew and they can connect in Lashon HaKodesh. And they can connect in Hebrew. And that's actually what happened. We look back to the story of Dor HaFlaga, right? We have the world is creating this tower. They want to fight against God. And God wanted to create a certain level of purity. He needed to separate them. He needed to stop this. So what did he do? He mixed them up. He changed their languages. Because now that they no longer had the common language, they were no longer able to communicate. They were no longer able to connect with one another. And it's also the unique letters and the ksav of the Torah, which not only points to the pnimius of the Torah, but it also gives the ability for Jews all over to connect, right? We have Jews, once again, from all over the world. Doesn't matter where you're living or what your life circumstances are. When two Jews meet together, they can discuss Daf Yomi. They can discuss a word in the Parsha. Why do you think Rashi says this? Or I understood this? Or my rabbi says this? Or my rabbi said that? Wow. They can have absolutely nothing in common. And I see it all the time. I always laugh that, you know, Torah is the secret language. Because I see it when I watch my husband. We're in the most random places. People that you externally, you would probably never put together that we would have a conversation. And all of a sudden you become close. And you can connect. And the Torah also gives us this ability to connect with one another. And Yerushalayim does the same thing. We said that Yerushalayim is ir yirah, right? It's the city that awakens us to look. But we also have the second part of Yerushalayim, which is ir shalom. It's a city of peace. We say in Tehillim, Yerushalayim is ir shechura layachdav, a city that we join together, a city that unites. And you think about it, where else in the world, other than the Kotel, can you find a minyan that you have Sfardim, Ashkenazim, Hasidim, Mitnagdim, people who are religious, people who are not yet religious, people from all different walks of life. And it really doesn't matter who you are or where you're from, but the Kotel is the place that everyone can unite together and form a minyan. And that's really the koach of Yerushalayim, the koach of the ear shalom, the ear that we can connect together and we can unite. And so hopefully this year, we're going to take the messages of Asar B'Teves. We'll look deeper at our own Yiddishkeit and observance of Torah and mitzvot, and we'll try to see the depth and the beauty of our fellow Jews. And hopefully this year, we're going to make Asar B'Teves, the year that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides to bring the Geula and rebuild the third Beis HaMikdash. But ladies, it's all up to us.